Thank you, Bruce, and good to be with you today. Brenda and I are different heights, so maybe we'll take this mic and just pass it back and forth. That might work a little better. Along with the microphone, I brought an eagle feather we might choose to hold on to. This feather was a gift to me in the first church I served in Bella Bella, British Columbia, which is on the central coast of BC, north of Vancouver Island, south of Prince Rupert. My parents said, could you have gotten any farther away from us? But my wife and I had a real adventure, challenge, cross-cultural experience. Suzanne was a new teacher, and me in the church, and Bella Bella, they like to play basketball out there, and that suited me just fine. And we'd both had cross-cultural experiences, and so really we're open to the experience, and the experience was transforming for each of us as we learned from a community that had incredible strength and also carried incredible hurt from the legacy of residential schools. And so after 3 years, we came back to Ontario with our first son in tow, and have continued to visit that community, stay connected to that community, and started asking what could we do to help in the work of truth and reconciliation. We were living north of Kingston at that point, Elgin and Portland, and at that time I met some people, you know, through the regional United Church, and people like Murray Wheatung. I don't know if you've ever crossed paths with Murray Wheatung, Shelley Knott Fife. Keith Knott is her dad, recently retired chief at Curve Lake First Nation. And that was, knowing them was part of the experience of coming to Bob Cajun 14 years ago, and then 7 years ago, starting ministry in Buckhorn and Curve Lake, and also working for the regional United Church. So this eagle feather was given to me early days in Bella Bella, and they said, you know, you speak truth and you speak from the heart when you hold an eagle feather. The eagle flies close to the Creator, and, you know, you're to speak truthfully. And it was said that this feather would help in reconciliation. And so we're going to be talking to you about the truth and reconciliation community today. We often meet in a circle and would start a meeting by passing this feather. It got dressed by Dorothy Taylor, an elder and knowledge keeper at Curve Lake, and she said, what colors should I use? And I said, I'm an Edmonton Oilers fan, so it's Edmonton Oilers colors on the beading.
Thank you, and I wish that I had worn something to represent my history as well, the award that Bruce mentioned. That I was given last year by the South African government is very special to me. And it was an award, the Oliver Tambo Award. Oliver Tambo was the second in charge from Nelson, well, was in charge while Nelson Mandela was in prison. And I met Oliver Tambo in 1979 in Southern Africa. I was born in Australia. I worked, I was a student and teacher in Edmonton for a while as well, and then became involved with the Free South Africa Committee and met many trade unionists who were coming through to talk about solidarity and support for people who are struggling against the apartheid regime. And so my partner and I at the time decided we would like to go and work full-time for SAC2 in Southern Africa. So we spent 2 years with SAC2 and the ANC in Zambia and Tanzania, working directly for them and recovering histories of people who'd been involved in, you know, since Mandela's time and before they passed away. And so the organization asked us if we could put that into a book, because there was so much rich history of not just individuals, but what was happening in the 50s and 60s with the trade unions and the anti-apartheid movement inside. So that became very important to me, and I came back to Canada, and we had a committee for almost 10 years. Some of us would work full-time while the others did the work as volunteers. and so on. We passed that around the group. Then I worked in the trade unions and social justice movement, the Labour Council of Toronto and Ontario Public Service Employees Union after that, and was able to take some of the trade union members, some Indigenous members especially, to South Africa to see what had been done after apartheid was defeated, even though there's still many problems today. But last year was very special to me to go back and meet people I hadn't seen for 40, 45 years, still involved within South Africa. And so like Rodney, I have a memento that is special to me, but it's in Toronto at the moment, sorry. I bide my time between Toronto and here. I'm basically here at a cottage in Bass Lake near Bob Cajun from April to November, and became involved with the Truth and Reconciliation community, Bob Cajun. I think that you're going to do a land acknowledgement. Is that how we do it?
Yeah, so the slide says we are all treaty people, and as settlers, there was no wars, really, to take the land from the original inhabitants. Treaties were made, and it was Treaty 20, which was 1823. I'm a little rusty. It was signed in Coburg, and that included these lands and how the lands would be shared between the Indigenous people, the Michisagig Anishinaabe, or Mississauga. It means the people who lived at the mouths of the river, really almost to where I was in Kingston, Gananoque, all the way around Lake Ontario. The people who lived at the mouths of the rivers were the Michisagig, and they were the ones who made treaty. And then in 1820, and then not until 1923 did they realize that not all the lands in this area were under treaty, and so the Williams Treaty was signed. The Indigenous people at that time were desperate, I've come to learn, impoverished, and that treaty was problematic. Some of the stories we heard about were, as soon as it was agreed upon, things were added into it, giving up hunting and fishing rights. That has been rectified. There's been other problems with the treaties when the Trent Severn Waterway flooded islands that were reserved by treaties, but we acknowledge that we are treaty people, and that the Michisagig and others, the Huron-Wendat, have been here for 12,000, 14,000 years, archaeology tells us, and some of the Anishinaabe, or the Ojibwe people, would say we were here from the beginning. That's our belief, although they do have migration stories as well. So anyway, that's a start, and I've got a little clicker here. We'll see if I'll pass it to you.
So this is representing the land and the water and the acknowledgement that we had. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission came out around about the same time as we formed our group, 2015-2016, and I think it's important for us to show that in the beginning we had a mentor, Gidigai Migazayaban, who's pictured there at the back, Doug Williams, who was from an elder from Curve Lake, who was very influential in supporting us, and also wrote a book about the history of this area. If you're able to get hold of that book, it's quite an amazing book. There it is, Michisagig Anishinaabeg, This Is Our Territory. It's available in the libraries here. I'm not sure if there are, I think Curve Lake still has copies, right, and for sale, the Wheaton Gallery, right, yeah. So it's a really interesting history that's untold by many others, and an alternative history for this area. So for us, it's been very important to develop relationships with members of Curve Lake First Nation. This is Ann Taylor. Obviously, during the COVID years, Anne Taylor is now an advisor to a Catholic school board in Peterborough area, and she's always been very supportive of the work of Truth and Reconciliation Community, Bob Cajun. So this is who we are. We're reimagining the relations with Indigenous peoples, settlers, and the land. And I think it's important to read our mission statement that we began in 2015, now 10 years ago. So our mission as the TRC Community Bob Cajun is to foster and develop respectful relationships among settlers, Indigenous neighbors, and the land. We encourage and support one another and anyone who will join us in moving towards restitution and decolonization. We are learning, educating, and working towards reconciliation locally within the settler community and in relationship with Michisagig Anishinaabeg. We are actively engaged in learning about and honoring treaties both locally and in the wider Canadian context. We continue to work towards restitution of wrongs as we respect the values and cultures of Indigenous communities. So it was the issue of wild rice, or Manoomin, that started the group in 2015. We heard, the group of us who heard about some settlers who were tearing out the wild rice from their cottage properties on North Pigeon Lake because they couldn't get their power boats through and so on, and the Indigenous people were calling for support because this is their traditional way of harvesting and tending, is to take this rice, wild rice, from Pigeon Lake, as they have done for thousands of years. And so this group began as a group to support the Indigenous rights to harvest and tend wild rice, or Manoomin. And there's an annual Manoomin festival that's been taking place for the last 4 years now at Curve Lake on September 28th. And there are speakers from all over North America coming to speak. There's demonstrations of how wild rice is prepared. There's canoes that take people out to the wild rice fields in the lake. And it's ready to harvest around the mid to end of September. So it's quite an educational experience if you've never seen it.
I'll just hold up a poster because I thought that's something. I'm going to invite you to a few learning opportunities. So it's actually the 27th is a Saturday, and if it's raining, it'll be on the Sunday. And it's at the Curve Lake Powwow Grounds, and it's all free. It starts with a sunrise ceremony at 7 in the morning. It's a little past sunrise. Pretty close. You don't want to go to a sunrise ceremony in June, or you'll be getting up at 5 to get there. And they'll feed you breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And it's free of charge. They've been doing this 6 years now, actually. Manoomin is the Anishinaabe word for wild rice, and it means good seed or God seed. And it's actually, that's part of the migration story, is the people traveled from the east and said, when you see the food growing on water, there was a prophecy, that's where you'll stop. And at one time, Rice Lake was the largest rice bed in the world. And the Trent Severn Waterway totally changed the Pigeon River flowing through Bob Cajun, like a small lake, raised the water level 4 feet. And, there's sawmills block the water flow into Rice Lake. So, again, a lot of that has been lost, and there's been efforts to, reestablish that inherent and traditional and treaty right to harvest wild rice. And, of course, that led to some of the conflict with cottagers who had, interest in water skiing. But this wild rice, it grows in 3 feet of water, and there needs to be kind of muddy soil. So it's more along the shoreline that the rice grows.
And very healthy for you, the wild rice.
Good for wildlife.
Good for wildlife, and yes, and can be bought in at Curve Lake at the Wheaton Gallery. Sometimes they run out, and even though I think the local Buckhorn Hardware have some sometimes, but there are places you can actually buy the wild rice, and it's very nutritious and very nutty flavored, and will be served the day of September 27th, as Rodney said. So we began with the Monoman issue, but then we became involved in supporting other issues important to Indigenous people as well. These are all taken from the day last year or the year before of the Monoman ceremony at Curve Lake. Yeah.
So if you don't come out September 27th, so the Monoman is, it's harvested traditionally in canoes with two sticks, someone pulling the canoe forward at the front and at the back, pulling the plant over with one stick and tapping it with the other, and the seeds would fall in the canoe, and then it would be placed in winrows, and it would be cured. And that previous slide was being roasted in the pot, and that's what it looks like on the plate, along with that's the salad, the wild rice salad. I think there was some bison meat served for lunch there too. Anyway, once you roast it over the fire in that big iron pot, you would winnow it, take it in a sheet, and throw it up and let the air take away the husk. And I guess I missed, you also dance the rice first to remove the hull. So it's quite a beautiful process, the harvesting of Monoman. And Monoman Kaywin is the name of the festival. It's online as well, and that really means the whole process of harvesting that wild rice, that Monoman.
I'll be serving breakfast that day. There's various of our members who will help cook, and with Indigenous chefs there that day to make special meals. So it's, you can come at any point during the day. It's a very very wonderful festival. So as I said, we became involved in other issues as well. Grassy Narrows, supporting them in their struggle. And early actions that we took were to support the issue of the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, which is known as the Red Shirt Campaign. And you've probably seen these hanging up in various places and institutions. And I think your museum here in Lindsay play a role. So there are thousands of women who've been murdered and gone missing, and there was a report 4 or 5 years ago that came out, and it's an amazing report about the missing and murdered Indigenous women in Canada, and some 234 recommendations came out of that report, which, you know, have not been adhered to. The same with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, 94 recommendations, and I think Canada has implemented 15, 16 of those so far. So it's important that we keep struggling to make sure these recommendations are carried out on our behalf to support the struggles. So these are some of the educational pamphlets we hand out at events. There's information about our organization, which you could pick up here. There's information about the early Indigenous history in the Kawathas. There's information about the garden that we have, and we'll speak to that in a moment, in Bob Cajun at the Beach Park. And the information about the Two-Row Wampum, which is from 1613, one of the oldest treaty relationships between the people of Turtle Island and Europeans on contact. This is a display we had at Settlers Village in Bob Cajun, and we work closely with them to see what else we can do there to make sure that education around Indigenous issues is proffered throughout the community. This is a paddle painted by Tiffany Knott from Bob Cage, from Curve Lake, and was displayed in Bob Cage in the summer of 2020. The T-shirt, which we usually wear, neither of us are wearing them this morning, but the truth, the T-shirt that was includes a feather design by Tiffany Knott again from Curve Lake, and the rest of us designed what we thought was important in terms of forging relationships and reimagining relationships with Indigenous people in this area.
I'll just say that we also have some buttons, and we are a complete volunteer organization. And so often if someone wants to make a donation, we give them a button with that logo and that purpose statement on it, reimagining relationships, Indigenous people, settlers, and the land. So education is a big focus, and our own education, this is a workshop at one of our members' homes, and she had a relationship with a woman from Northern Ontario, and she did a workshop on the gifts of the moose. And each part of that animal is used, and we were working on a necklace made out of bone is what happened. So often we eat when we get together, and our community is about 12 people, but we often, you know, welcome others in, and we have an email list. If you'd like to receive information about events, we could take your email today. This is Alice Williams. Brenda and I were actually at her home in Curve Lake yesterday, and she's from Northern Ontario, but she married into the Curve Lake community. And when I was using the washroom in her home, there was a letter there acknowledging her as the greatest quilter in the world. Alice is a prolific quilter, and Indigenous themes in her quilts. That's one of her quilts there. And this is a quilt that she's part of a group, and our group was meeting with the Kawartha Truth and Reconciliation Support Group. And it's an older group than us, so people, I was speaking of Murray Wheatung, and he was a part of that original group. And each of them prepared a square. Alice challenged them to make a reconciliation quilt that told their stories of how they were engaging in the work of learning the truth and seeking reconciliation. And that was sort of, an inspiration for us. And we have a quilt of our own, and we have a display copy that tells the story of that quilt. And each square was prepared by one of our members, and we thought it was important in the work we were doing. The square that I prepared is an image. I have a neighbor who actually is able to put posters onto fabric. So I didn't do as nearly as beautiful a job as Brenda did. I don't know if now's the time for you to talk about your square, Brenda, on the quilt.
Mine is the one with the women and water. The women are the water keepers in Indigenous culture. And so I embroidered a woman collecting water by the side of the river and to honor the water. And this is something that Indigenous women are known for is the carriers of water, and water is life. Water is in the womb. Water is everything to Indigenous communities, and many places do not have clean water, many Indigenous nations. So that was the theme that I chose to put on the quilt. There are many others there, but the one that Rodney had was to do with cottages and Indians, and I'll let him explain.
Yeah, and we hope to have time for questions and time for you to look at some of the resources. We do have a booklet that describes each of the squares on the quilt. And I think, and the display for our quilt as well was thanks to the Lindsay Museum. It resided there for a number of months, and so we've had good support through partners. One of the first things that we did, one of the first big things we did as a volunteer group, was host the play Cottagers and Indians by Curve Lake author and playwright Drew Hayden Taylor. This was commissioned by the Tarragon Theatre in Toronto, and we wanted to bring it to ground zero, if you will. That conflict around wild rice, you know, made the national news. I was in Nova Scotia when I heard about it. This play examines it, and so we worked with Lakeview Arts Barn in bringing the play here to Bob Cajun and the Kawarthas. We had school groups in, we had educational workshops. Gaming Nature Center, that's the barn at Gaming Nature Center where we hosted some of the workshops. James Wheatung's daughter, Damon, giving workshops. And so that was a huge undertaking for a volunteer group to do that. And each year we would get together and we would have a visioning day, a brainstorming day, and there's our quilt at, again, COVID time, I think at near your home there on Bass Lake, Brenda. And there's the quilt that we just told you about that we produced as our group.
So we received funding. You know, you might ask, well, how did we afford to put on the Cottages and Indians play, for example? We received some funding from the United Church, from some of the unions that we've been involved with, Ontario Public Service Employees Union, to put these workshops on and plays on at Lakeview Arts Barn. And so that was very important to us. And in fact, that play has been in at the Playhouse in Gananoque this summer, so it's still very relevant today. So this was our quilt project, and there's a story behind each of the squares. And we have a booklet, as Rodney showed you about it. Now, I think we've run out of prints of the booklet, but you can come and have a look at it. We hold a lot of public discussions about issues. These are some of the quilt photographs. This is at the Lindsay Museum here. We do a lot of educational work. We set up booths wherever we can. And one of the most important things to us is September 30th. We have a book club, so we discuss books like Five Little Indians by Michelle Good and How to Be an Anti-Racist. Every few months we have a book club discussion amongst our group. And there's one of those outside and on a very sunny day at our friend Ann Davidson's place. So as I was saying, one of the most important events of the year is on September 30th, and it will be held again this year in Bob Cajun. We decided to honor when the children's graves were found in Kamloops. We decided to involve the community in painting the stones. So we have 215 because that was the first group of children's graves that were found. And of course, there's many more thousands since then in various different Indigenous communities where residential schools, where children died in the residential schools. So we involved the community in painting 215 stones, and we displayed these outside what was the Bob Cajun Library and now is the Boyd Museum, and in a very public place near the locks. This is some of the children and community involved in painting the stones. There they are there. And we very proudly displayed them outside the library. And to this day, every year, the Boyd Museum asked us this year, putting the stones out again, because every year people come from outside, tourists and people within Bob Cajun, and ask, what is this all about? What are these stones? What are these orange stones here? So it's a very good educational tool. If we're around, we speak to the issue. We have pamphlets. We had it at the Fenelon Falls Museum, Maryborough Lodge, for a while. We had it on the steps of the city of Kawartha Lakes here. For the first September, I think that was the first September 30th commemoration that the city here, and every year they have a flag raising and a commemoration ceremony. This was our first ceremony at the Bob Cajun Library, and we had something like 300 people attend at that time, and every year since then, the last four years now, we have ceremonies, and still we have a huge gathering of people by the lake in Bob Cajun.
So we have a book here, Beyond the Orange Shirt Story, Why We're Wearing Orange Shirts. It's based on a woman, Phyllis Webstad, who when she was taken to residential school, had a new shirt from her grandmother. That shirt was taken away. Her hair was cut. We haven't talked a lot about residential schools, what they're about. And really, I think it's up to every Canadian to do that learning. Media does a good job of telling that story. And a really good opportunity, there's a woman from Lindsay here named Sharon Woodrow, and she learned about something called the Witness Blanket. And it's at the Museum for Human Rights in Winnipeg, the original, but there are replicas. And one of those replicas is at the Cannington United Church. We just had an opening for it on Sunday afternoon. They're having ceremony there on September the 30th, and it's there until October the 18th, free of charge. There's a wonderful video, and then you can come forward and, the blanket has artifacts and stories from residential schools all across Canada, some of the, abuse that was suffered. And it's got QR codes, and so you hear about the story of each of these artifacts and why it's significant to learn about that truth. So I challenge you to make that trip. I think it's open every day, but for Sundays and Mondays. But again, posters here, and there's lots of opportunity, to check it out online. But I really do encourage you to do that. And we also want to invite you to our event in Bob Cajun. It's at 5 o'clock on September the 30th. There's 20 posters down here. If you can take one and put it up here in Lindsay, that would be great. We gather at the Boyd Museum and then reconvene at the Bob Cajun Beach Park, where we've, I don't know if we have pictures. Do we have pictures? We do. Okay, we'll get to what that reconciliation garden in the beach park is all about.
So these are the still pictures of the first commemoration that we did in Bob Cajun. This is sort of a photo of winter. It's a quieter time during the winter when people are away or just not able to gather as we normally do. But then in the spring, and this was taken a few years ago when we started the Bob Cajun Beach Project, the city of Kawartha Lakes was redoing the whole area of the beach park in Bob Cajun, and we were given...
My dog.
Yeah. You're not there, but your dog is there. Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah. I don't have my glasses on. I took the picture. Yeah. So the city allowed us an area to work with Curve Lake First Nation. We had Ann Taylor and Manny Taylor and others come and suggest to us what could be done in this area, and they suggested either 7 or 14. Stones would represent either the 7 grandfather teachings or 14 stones, an opening in the east there, and a garden planted around the edge. So Ann Taylor from Curve Lake suggested the name Ginawendamin. I'm always... Rodney will say it better.
Ginawendamin, but you start at the end. So everybody say min. Dimin, Wendimin, Noendimin, Gede Noendimin. There you go. You learned an Anishinaabe word here today. It means we are all related. Us The indigenous people, plant life, they're all native indigenous plants to this area, and they all have medicinal value in this garden.
So we asked an indigenous plant specialist, Bedaben Peltier, who's a teacher at Fleming College and also part of Creator's Garden, and he's very knowledgeable about the indigenous plants and what would be important to plant there. So we work quite well with this grade 7 and 8 teacher in Bob Cajun Public School, and she brought her students the day we were planting these indigenous plants that Bedaben had suggested. So that's just the beginning, and now the place is overgrown. Rodney and his partner were weeding on the weekend. It was quite the effort. But it was lovely. It was pouring rain, and the students came out that day to help us plant around the beach park garden there. It's a very, very special place to us. And we have gatherings there. As Rodney said, we'll be walking from the Boyd Museum and taking stones, each of us taking one of the orange stones to walk to this beach park garden. On September 30th again, 5 o'clock till 6:30. It's not a late evening. And some of the plants there are quite beautiful. Yesterday I was at Bass Lake, and there's a creek that goes up to Crystal Lake, and I take my kayak as far as I can sometimes. And yesterday I thought, I'm going to take this plant. It's called closed bottle gentian. There's a white one and there's a blue one. We have a blue one planted there at the park, and I haven't been able to successfully grow a blue one, but I found some white ones up the creek, and I thought, I'll just go and gather one. And yesterday I went in my kayak and I pulled one out. It was in a very watery edge. It was easy to pull out. And then I went to my garden, and there's a sort of a very wild edge of my garden. It's like, there's one already there, and I'd never noticed. It was there all the time. I didn't need to take it out of the creek. But so these are special plants. And this is a gathering where we had the over 55 women, over 55 group, the Getsinya group from Curve Lake. We invite them regularly now, it seems, every year to an event in the garden, and sometimes we take them sailing at the sailing club that Rodney's part of. And it's very special that we had this festival, strawberry festival, this year with the Getsinya group. And that's Mary Taylor, or Mani Taylor, who told us the story of the strawberry story. That's very important around forgiveness in indigenous culture. So this was a great day. Always there's food, because, you know, Rodney is one of those people that always has to have food at events. So we had a feast after, including Kawatha Dairy ice cream, of course, ice cream and strawberries, and a sing-song with the Getsinya group. Sometimes they sing Amazing Grace in Anishinaabe, the Moan, and it's quite lovely to hear. So we've developed a good relationship with them at the garden especially.
Yeah, this is some pictures of last year's event. We had drummers join us, and, you know, we try to balance what we can do as non-Indigenous people and when we need to, you know, work with Indigenous knowledge keepers and singers and drummers. Brittany Taylor has done a lot of work with us. She's actually working in the school board now and working in schools to teach kids about Indigenous people and Indigenous ways, which I think are really helpful, you know, going forward, helpful for the planet and for people in general. There's a lot of good wisdom to share, offering a smudge there, Brittany is. So we make sure that, like, if you wanted to make a donation, that's some of the money that we would then use to pay honorarium for people like Ann Taylor, who spoke powerfully last year. This year we have Sarah Lewis, former poet laureate from the city of Peterborough, young woman from Curve Lake. Janet McHugh, who's quite a drummer. So we had we hope we have the same weather as last year for September the 30th. And you can certainly drive. You don't need to walk from the Boyd Museum to the beach park. But it was a beautiful evening, and again a good show of support. But it's more than September the 30th. Murray Sinclair in that Truth and Reconciliation Commission report said these 94 recommendations, we've laid out for you a pathway to climb the mountain, but it's up to you to do the work, to do the walking. And really that's the work that we're trying to do with the Truth and Reconciliation Bob Cajun community.
Out of the work of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission community, Bob Cajun, sorry, TRC Bob Cajun, we started another project a few years back through our work with mentor Doug Williams' band, or Gitagai Migazay band from Curve Lake. There was a special place, like 4 or 5 acres in the heart of Bob Cajun, right opposite what was the library, now the Boyd only the Boyd Museum. And he said that was a special place where Indigenous people came through, camped there, maybe did some controlled burns and planted other Indigenous plants, had ceremonies, and canoed from there to Boyd Island or Chimneys Island in Pigeon Lake. So it was a very special place, and we thought, wow, it would be great if we could do something there together with Curve Lake, because, you know, not a lot of people go to Curve Lake First Nation. People who are aware go there and go to events and the powwow, which is coming up as well, not this coming weekend, but the weekend after. But, you know, what if we had something very visible in downtown Bob Cajun that was a joint project between our group and Curve Lake community? And we got support from Curve Lake Chief and Council, a couple of them, and they said, great, you know, if you purchase the land and we set up a project together, that's great. So we investigated whether we could purchase this property in the heart of Bob Cajun. But the owners want something like $3 million. I think it's up for sale now. And it was valued at $1 million by the real estate community. And we thought, well, we could raise $1 million, but we could never get a mortgage or anything like that for $3 million. But we started fundraising and got some initial great support from people, pledged support that everybody was in favor of this, but we just couldn't actually carry that out unless magic happens and this group of 10 people who own that land might say to us, okay, we'll sell it to you for $1 million, and then maybe we'd start again. But in the meantime, we looked at what other kinds of projects. We had some initial funding, and we became a charitable organization, which is not an easy task. So the Mishkude Center for Indigenous Knowledge is what we created to, at the time, hopefully purchase this land. But we're now looking at other projects, and one of them is to provide a digital museum of Indigenous history and culture throughout the Kawarthas. So sort of trying to assess what students and teachers, settler community, Indigenous communities, what people would like to see that would be more accessible digitally around the history and culture of Indigenous people in the Kawarthas. So it's a project that we applied for funding last year from the federal government digital museum project. We were rejected, but they said, we like your idea. It's just that you're not very specific about the videos or the video games that you would be using for children and so on. So we're working now with Ampere, which used to be Pingwak, and we're still preparing to put in another application this year. And we met yesterday, as Rodney said, with Alice Williams and the Kawartha Truth and Reconciliation Support Group to get ideas from them about how we would go forward. So that's the current project for Mishkude Center.
So as volunteers, we're pretty passionate about what we do, you might guess. And we just wanted to, we're grateful for the opportunity to share our passion, to let you know some of the work we've been about. Open to questions for sure. Hope you do take away some of the items. I just have one poster advertising the Curve Lake Powwow. If you've never been there, 72nd annual, September 20th and 21st, Saturday and Sunday. Things really get going at noon, but there is a sunrise, 6 a.m. for the powwow, or the weekend after that, the Manoomin. We also have the brochures, and there's enough posters to take one for September 30th. Don't forget to go to Cannington. I think that's an important one as well. Lots of ways you can make a difference. Wearing a piece of moose hide, there's a whole story that goes with that. It's geared towards men, preventing violence with women and children, especially Indigenous women and children, but all women and children. So pick up one of those, learn about it. I brought along Gord Downey of the Tragically Hips graphic novel about residential schools, you know, The Secret Path, and Gord Downey made that kind of his legacy project as well. He said it's up to Canadians to do something. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to do something to make a change. And thank you for your attention here this morning.